Welcome once again to Food Conversations, a program about food in all its aspects, from planting seeds to munching it down, with a special emphasis on establishing food sovereignty in the Shuswap. I'm your host, Warren Bell, and you're listening to us on CKVS FM 93.7, the voice of the Shuswap, community radio for the people, with the people, and by the people. Today we have a special guest who is central to the whole process of food conversations and to the food community in Salmon Arm. We have Melanie Bennett, Secretary of the Shuswap Food Action Society. Good morning and welcome, Melanie.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. We have once again used the miracle of digital telecommunications. Melanie's on her phone in the community teaching garden as we speak, and I'm in the studio and we're connecting through Zoom. And that keeps us all safe in this time of COVID, and it also allows Melanie to do something out there in the community while I do something here in the studio.
Melanie, yes, today we have a class from the South Canoe School. They are in there in the garden pulling and harvesting spinach, spreading compost, planting seeds. So it's wonderful.
This is food at its origin, real-time food, not something from a catalog somewhere or a store shelf. Melanie, it's interesting that you're in the food garden because this is a central project of the Food Action Society. And it makes me think maybe we can start off by just talking about motivation for the kind of work you do. And obviously, motivation includes very concrete actions. What has kept you going on the long days when there's a lot of work to do and time is short? What keeps you going in this work, this important work about establishing a food system, a really meaningful food system here in the Shuswap?
For me personally, I became a member of the Shuswap Food Action Society a number of years ago. And it's just, I really believe in a strong local food economy. Mainly, I'm quite passionate about food security, knowing that we have an abundant supply of food because we all have to eat. And for security reasons, just making sure we have nutritious food. My children, I have two young children, and I really want them to know how to grow their own food. I want them to live in a society that has healthy population and an abundance. That word abundance is really key to me.
Key as well as quality. One of the things that a further concept in this area is food sovereignty, meaning that we have control over the food, not just that the amount and even, say, the cost, because that's been a big focus for 20 or 30 years, is cheap food. It's also food that feeds humans really successfully and makes us all, gives us control over the food supply, so we determine what's in the food supply, not somebody 5,000 kilometers away.
Well, and that's integral too, because, I mean, my food journey started with just learning more about the origins of our food. Where does our food come from? And it's wonderful that, you know, we're back on the radio because we, of course, started the series this on the radio with Serena and I.
And Shelley Corbin.
And Shelley Corbin. We were all just, you know, speaking about where this all started and, you know, reiterating that this came from a radio program, Deconstructing Dinner from the Kootenays. And it started to open my eyes to where our food actually comes from. And as I continue this journey of knowledge, listening to podcasts and reading books and understanding just how reliant we are on a global system, so much of our food comes from other places. And that is not sustainable.
The evidence for climate change mitigation and just generally making our planetary home more secure overall has a great deal to do with food. And what you're talking about is also making a world that's better for future generations, where food is contributing to that better future in many different ways.
And that's a core tenet and the mission statement of the Shoeshot Food Action Society is, you know, we want to build community around food. It is, you know, it's that cornerstone of so much of what we do. And it's so pleasurable and it's so nourishing in so many ways, emotionally, physically, of course.
Every meeting that I go to where there's food is a meeting that I tend to be very enthusiastic about attending.
Absolutely.
So I think I understand intrinsically what you're talking about, Melanie. Let's launch a little bit into the work that the Shoeshot Food Action Society is doing, because the programs are broad and they cover a whole range of areas. And I think it's good for our listeners to understand how comprehensive the program is and also that it's steadily expanding into new areas. The turning point in one wave at the material level for the Food Action Society occurred last year earlier this year, with the famous Coldest Night of the Year event, which was a major event in the community and also has given the society a considerable sort of financial starting point, if you like, a bank account that can actually be drawn upon and doesn't disappear immediately when you do so. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that event, because that was something that a lot of people participated in and had quite an impact on the community overall.
Yes, and, you know, yes, you're right. It has been building. You know, I just want to give, you know, acknowledgement to those who began this society, you know, starting as a co-op. John McLeod was an integral figure with keeping it going and pushing for policy. And as, you know, with Serena coming on as president, she is so much a doer that she's given a lot of energy, not only her own energy, but she also excites a lot of people to want to do things. And the Coldest Night of the Year came to us at such an important time. You know, so many of our programs, and Serena has been working so find the grants. Much of this work relies on finding grants, and we are competing with many organizations for the same money. And, you know, you have to have a really good plan and a really good project in order to get it. And she's been very successful, and she's got a lot of things happening. The Coldest Night of the Year allowed us to raise awareness, not only about our society, who we are, what we're doing, but raise awareness about food security. And, you know, being at a time with COVID, the community needed it. It was a outdoor safe sort of event that people could pull together behind and really rally about. And with so many stories on CBC talking about food security, about food banks, there was so much need. It all just really came at a really interesting timing. And it was successful, and it really motivated us in a way that gave us a lot of encouragement. And with those finances and with those resources, it kind of gives you this sigh of relief, like, okay, now we can really, let's start thinking like strategy. Let's think strategic plan. What's our goals? What are we going to do?
And the Shoeshot Food Action Society now has charitable status as well, which allows donations to come from generous donors who want to give more than just a modest support to the organization, but want to do what you just described, give it security so that you can heave that sigh of relief once and then get on with the work that you would like to do.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, there are a lot of projects that the Shoeshot Food Action Society is involved with. I'm just going to list them off, and you can add any if I've missed any. But just we'll get the list out on the airwaves, and then we'll start talking a little bit about each one. So first of all, of course, there's a place where you're sitting right now, which is the Shoeshot Community Teaching Garden, which is a very active place when the growing season is on. There's the downtown Salmon Arm Farmers Market. There's a couple of boxes. There's the shoe box, and we'll explain that in a bit. And then, of course, there's the Shoeshot Family Box. And then there's an event up at Jackson High School, a process going on called Foodie Fridays, which I hope everybody's interested when you hear that, because foodies abound all over the place. And then, of course, there's this program that we're participating in right now called Food Conversations. And I'd like to let the listeners know that we have one of the originators of the original Food Conversation program with us here in the studio today, Shelley Corbin. We're delighted to have you listening in on what we're doing, and perhaps we'll get some comments from you at some point. So let's start at the top, where you are right now. Melanie, you're in the garden.
Yes. Yes, it's a beautiful place. Now, this garden is often confused with the community garden that is downtown on Schuschwab Street, and that is a private community garden with a waiting list and everything. So this particular community garden is up in North Broadview, past Elks Hall, towards Canoe, and it's a private property that is being allowing us to use it in order to communally grow this large garden space with the intent of growing as much food as we possibly can to give to our local food banks and other organizations. It's volunteer-based, so we can always use volunteers, and we're happy to have people because many hands make light work. And so I have people contact me. I've taken on the role as coordinating it because it does require coordination to know to secure the seeds and tools and keep people coming up and plan events and workshops. So I have people contact me if they'd like to learn more. And we do a lot of posts on Facebook as well.
And you even have garden yoga.
Yes.
Tell us about garden yoga.
We're so thankful for community involvement. I mean, that's what this is all about, too. We want this space to be a very inclusive space, and it's open for people to come. It's large. It's got lots of room. We've got a hand-washing sink. There's a bathroom that's been generously – there's a portable toilet from Reliable Septic. They've generously donated that. And garden yoga comes into this large open space that we have. And so Gratitude Hot Yoga Studio – they come every Sunday now, as long as the weather is decent. And we do an hour-long class from 10 to 11. It's peaceful. You listen to the birds. You watch the clouds in the sky. And it's a really magical experience. It's a karma class, so it's by donation, either by cash donation or time in the garden. And it just encourages people who have maybe never been here before to come up and enjoy the space.
And people who would like to do a little yoga while they're... Yes. Pulling weeds.
Or for afterwards to stretch out those lower backs.
Now, one of the most visible signs of the activities of the Schuschwab Food Action Society is the farmers market, the downtown farmers market. That's a project that just about anybody who drives through town is going to witness on a Saturday morning and early afternoon. Talk about that a little bit, Melody, and how it really got started and what it's up to.
Well, as you know, for those who know, for a long time, there was no central Salmon Arm downtown market. And for being such an agricultural area, just didn't quite make sense. So for various reasons, there just wasn't one. And so a lot of our local farmers were actually heading off to different locations, Revelstoke and Kelowna, and selling their local food elsewhere. So Serena was very integral to this project. So Claire Askew is also on our board, and she and Serena, being friends, were just talking like, we need to have a downtown farmers market. And Claire was on the Downtown Association board as well. And it just came about from conversations and a wish and a desire to see a really exciting, family-friendly, community-based, central community farmers market again. So Serena she really wanted this to happen. She found the farmers and connected them, secured, you know, some grants and sponsorship from SASCU and the City of Salmon Arm. Lindsay Wong was really helpful in helping her to get the book bands and using the Ross Street Plaza. So it just came together from a passion to see a space that our community can gather to support our local farmers and have that place where people can come and say hello to each other and get excited about local seasonal food.
As is so common in a small community, events where you accomplish a task, such as getting some food, are also a scene for social engagement and talking to your friends and catching up on local gossip. And in addition, there's a little music. And recently, you've had a couple of youth-oriented booths. You've had booths where young people have come with products or produce. Talk about that kind of stuff, that kind of additional stuff.
Yeah, the very first market this particular year was a youth market, just engaging our local young people to get back involved in the idea of agriculture. You know, the fall fair has been so good for that too. People putting in their, you know, their goods into the fair. We so desperately want young people to get their hands in the soil, grow food, get excited about food, because so often they end up selling it to their parents. I mean, selling the idea, you know, growing food is fun. Eating healthily is great. So engaging with the youth is a really big part of our next steps.
Yes, we'll be talking about that as we move through some of the future projects as well as the projects that are ongoing. One of the other kinds of less visible projects, or the two of them, they're kind of linked together, is the Shoebox project and the Shuswap Family Box. Now, I should mention, by the way, for listeners, that if you hear some laughing voices in the background, that's children romping around in the community food teaching garden.
That they're just heading out, actually. Thank you for your help.
We were very happy to feature them as background context for this interview. So talk about the boxes, the shoe box and the family box. They're related, but not exactly the same.
Yeah, not exactly the same. So the shoebox is a new branding of the Shuswap box that came about last year at the farmer's market.
And by the way, I couldn't get my spell check to write S-H-U. Every time I said shoebox, it put S-H-O-E. It's a new thing.
So this, you know, this new branding that's sort of happening, the shoe brand for the Shuswap. So we're just sort of playing along with that too, right? This is all about engaging people to experience seasonal eating, trying new foods, things that you may not already or you may not usually order. And this, so it's an experience box, really. You can order it on the online platform, the localline.ca. The Salmonar Market, and you can order this box. It comes with what's in season. And so, like this week, I believe there's, you know, there's radishes and salad turnips and greens. And then it also has a dozen eggs and a loaf of organic bread. So certainly enough food in there to make a number of really nice meals. But it also comes with a recipe and just more information on seasonal eating. If we could kind of get back to that a little bit, eating what's in season, you know, when things are at their maximum freshness and peak of nutrition, it's what the farmers have. It would be a really healthy way for us to look at food again.
It also means that people look forward to the seasonal foods. They know when the strawberries are coming in. They know that the rhubarb's sprouting out of the ground uproariously like it does every spring. They know that asparagus is on its way. So it actually, by the seasonal nature of the food you consume, it ties you to an awareness of what's going on with the seasons and with the weather.
Yes, absolutely. It's a partnership. I mean, even with, you know, CSAs, so community supported agriculture boxes from farmers, it's a partnership between the people who are in the community with our farmers, and we're working together because the weather has been very peculiar this spring. It's been challenging. And so we're in this together in all ways.
Yes, indeed. Mother Nature is in charge and we are with her as much as we can be. Now, it also is something that extends out of the growing season because there is some plans to kind of store food. This is a bit heading off into the future so that it can be made available out of season. So there can be food distributed. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more later, but that idea of extending the season is also a very useful one. Now, one that I think is very directly involving young people is Foodie Fridays at Jackson High School. Tell listeners about Foodie Friday.
So Foodie Friday, so the Jackson Junction. So Serena is a dietitian with Interior Health, and she, I think it was last year or the year before, she had done an audit basically on what's happening in schools in our local area to, you know, who has a cafeteria, who serves what food. And unfortunately, we'd have to say it's getting a failing grade. we don't have enough good food for students, and we don't have cafeterias anymore. And, you know, kids head off and they go and get, you know, Tim Hortons, or not everybody also, I mean, some people are using school in order to have some food. That's just the reality. And so there wasn't anything at Jackson High. And so it came about from, you know, a desire to use what is in season from our farmers, what abundance do they have to make nutritious soups once a week, a free meal to all the students at Jackson High School. So they have volunteers who come into the kitchen. They have been making this beautiful soup of local as possible ingredients with local organic buns, and providing it to the students. And it's been very well received. The teachers are thrilled, so much so that they want to extend it to next year. And it turns out that the Shoe Shop Food Action Society is going to take over the Jackson Junction and, and do a meal program there.
Up to 4 days a week, I understand. You've also got bread from Marcus Yeager with Inspired Foods, who comes to the organic food market. He's supplying a few buns. And one feature of this particular project that I think is pretty inspired is that the soup is prepared on site, and the entire school is filled with the aroma of garlic and onions. That's got to be a smart idea.
Absolutely. I mean, food is an experience, and the smell of food is a big part of enticing people, especially children, to try new foods.
Up until the time this was brought on board, teachers were even ordering food in for students. They were like ordering in pizzas. People were doing all sorts of things to get food into the school setting, and there was nothing actually going on in the school itself. So this is an important step that you've taken with the Jackson.
It is, and a big part of it is going to be to support teachers. You know, they can't do everything. You know, packs and things like that. We all try our best. You know, I'm a mother of two children in school, and we have, you know, once a month hot lunches. I would love to see a hot lunch more available to my kids. I'll pay for it. I'll pay those, you know, $2, $3, $4 to be able to provide my child with a hot lunch. And that's sort of how we're hoping to be able to move things into the future.
And the future, to borrow a phrase without attributing it to its source, the future is friendly. If we start to do these kinds of projects and expand them. And there is a fair amount of interest within the society, as I understand it, to broaden the scope that is already there into more and more creative kinds of projects. So one of them, which I think is quite fascinating, is the establishment with cooperation from the Salvation Army of a concept that is actually quite ancient, and that's called a food forest. So why don't you talk a little bit about the community teaching garden in this particular context, like the new... So
this has come about because we love this space here in North Broadview. We love growing this food together, and we love the community that we've brought here too, but it is not central, and it's not front and center to those who really do need this food. They're not as able to get up here and experience this as much. And so a big, you know, big task ahead, but how do we engage those who need the food and get them involved in the process too? And so we really do want to see something that's in our downtown core. And it's, you know, it came about because I was getting connected with Joel Torrens, just asking questions during coldest night of the year to better understand the homeless population. And I just wanted to learn more about what's happening locally. And he had a great desire to see a space that provided food for free. He was very inspired by a conversation that was led by Serena at a local coalition of social service organizations, just about food security in general. And he found this article about Lethbridge planting fruit trees that anybody could come by and pick. And so this idea that we will... So now we have a space, the Lighthouse, the Salvation Army, and a very willing executive director and a willing board. And we have a permaculture designer, Kelly Westgate, involved. And we've developed a committee in order to plan out changing the Lighthouse Salvation Army property, which is just grass at the moment, into food production. And a balance between perennial foods, so perennial things that come up every year, fruit trees, fruiting shrubs, perennial vegetables, asparagus is a perennial vegetable, mixed with also annual production. We want it to be a situation where those who live in the downtown core can come and lend a hand, learn, put their passion and energy into it, and also produce food for the Salvation Army and beyond. We'll see how much food we can produce. So this is very exciting because the vision is to get more community gardens downtown and a better union of community spaces, playgrounds, with also food production.
There's some features of this particular project that I think are really exciting. One is the establishment of a food corridor. Maybe you talk about that concept.
It's an idea that's brewing, and it's I live downtown. I walk around the downtown activity center. I walk around, Blackburn and the Salvation Army, and I just see so much grass. I see so much space, and just I know that it's used for soccer, and that's wonderful. But there is just so much green space that sits idle for so long. And a food corridor, if you're just thinking about it, just think about this meandering space of fruit trees, garden beds, beautiful landscaping that includes not only flowers for pollinators and everything, but also food production where your community can be involved, take care of it, harvest from it. It's just a really beautiful vision, and it's absolutely possible. Places do it all over the world. We can too. We are a little city with big ideas, and there's a need. There's a lot of need for food right now. Every social service organization is giving out food, not just the food banks. Everyone is.
It's interesting that the concept of a food forest is an ancient one found in the Amazon basin and in the southeastern states. And actually, evidence suggests that it supplies more nutrition than any other form of agriculture. Food forests.
Absolutely.
Another project that is very germane to food availability is centers around the reduction of food waste. And one way that the Food Action Society is planning to work on that is to have a gleaning project, a formal project to invite volunteers to engage in gleaning fields that have already been worked over. Talk about that a little bit, Melanie.
Yes. So gleaning, not everybody knows what gleaning is, but basically it's harvesting the excess, the abundance that comes from fruit trees, certainly wild fruit trees around town, comes from people's gardens or maybe farms where they have more than they can harvest. And so you can invite people to come in and glean that abundance. It has been happening locally at a small scale. Lots of organizations have sort of tried to do it, but it takes some effort. It takes coordination. We have to have waivers and manage volunteers and have a database of all the various places that can be done. And so it's an undertaking for sure. But what we have come to realize, and so integral to what we were campaigning around with the coldest night of the year, was collaboration. And let's not double up on efforts. If somebody's already doing something well, let's just strengthen that. And so what we're doing with all of these big topics, whether it's community gardens or farmers markets or gleaning, is trying to develop these committees and finding the people who have an interest and have a skill set or knowledge who can help us to strengthen a bigger project. And in this case, we had a Zoom meeting that included Val from the Second Harvest and Michael from the Sorrento Center and Joel. And basically what's been discussed is we need to engage more volunteers. mainly because a lot of our volunteer population is older. They come from a generation where their community-mindedness was part of their upbringing, and that seems to be maybe a little less so now. And so we need to engage younger people who are willing to go up a ladder, and it's a little bit physical, certainly, you know, bending over and doing all that. And so we want to, the Food Action Society wants to engage volunteers, get a database and link the places that will provide or have the abundance with those who can go and pick it. And then that food will go to the Second Harvest. It will go to the Salvation Army, the places that can actually process it, clean it, store it, and then also distribute it.
The reduction of food waste has been a big issue for a long time. And the other issue is that food out of season, storage of food out of season, is also something that many people have talked about, the fact that we want fresh food, but we can't have it year-round. But if we have storage facilities, then we can probably, we can save it and keep it for other times of the year.
Yes. And, so, you know, when you're picking it then at its peak nutrition and freezing it, that's a, you know, a very superior way of keeping that crop. Of course, if, you know, freezers depend on electricity and everything, so you want to have a variety of methods. But, you know, one of the things that has come up so many times in discussions is, look at all the fruit that we have here. We're so blessed to have this abundance of fruit that so often falls on the ground. And what a waste that is. What a shame. And so what if we could collect that fruit, especially put it into some freezers around town? Think about all the freezers that are in schools that sit idle through the summer. Put it in some freezers and use it for school smoothies. You know, here's a breakfast program just waiting to happen. Smoothies for breakfast. There's endless possibilities.
There are endless possibilities. And they're probably going to become more abundant as time goes by. And we think about these issues and start implementing specific projects. Now, one way to make this happen is to have some communication tool that connects people together, that allows people to see in the community who's doing what. And one of those is a collaboration that the Society, Food Action Society, is working on with SoilMate to create a website that lists producers in the area.
And this is already a very good website. This came about because we were talking about a local food directory. And the Food Action Society's website used to have one, but things have changed and it's gone. And it was no longer up to date anyways. But in the end, again, why double up on what's being done if it's already there? And so this happened because I can't remember who, but they brought it up and they said, well, what about SoilMate? And if it, I encourage everyone to go on it. It was created like 6 years ago by this very nice fellow who saw that need. He wanted to connect local people with their local farmer. He developed a beautiful website. The farmers don't have to pay anything. They can advertise their farm right there on this nicely functioning site. You can put in your location and it will tell you every farm and food producer, as long as the farm has put their information online, that's within your radius. And you can plot a route. And so, you know, again, it comes down to there's lots of little pokers in the fire. There's lots of conversations being had. And we want more people to become involved. And if there's a project that interests you and you would like to be on that committee and you have some ideas, we want to hear from you.
And now we interrupt regular programming for a small commercial announcement. I'd just like to tell everybody who's listening that our researcher for our program is in the studio today. She came down for some photographic activities. And I'd like to just give Shelley Corbin, who was not only the researcher for Food Conversations, but was a co-developer of the original live Food Conversations program at Okanagan College. She's in studio with her today, with us today, and I just want to welcome Shelley and say we're very delighted to have you here and to have you part of the Food Conversations team.
Oh, well, thank you, Warren. It's good to be here and good to be part of the team. Steve, too?
We have quite a solid little group here that makes things happen. Shelley, just a couple of words about what it's like to see the original program that you started up transformed into this radio show that has also had its own kind of trajectory and been quite successful, it would appear. What's that like for you, watching it transition?
Well, the outreach, I think, is tremendous. You know, there were limited numbers of people, and most of them, you know, members of the choir, so to speak, that came to the college talks, and it was great. It was a beginning, and I think that's how things work. We start small, we keep moving forward, we keep the vision, and hopefully spread it to the people that need it, that want it, and that know how to get in touch, right? So community radio is a great vehicle for that.
Shelley, I know you have some engagements you have to get to. I just want to thank you for being here and thank you on air for all the hard work you've put into making this show a success. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And now back to regular programming.
I learned that on radio somewhere. So moving along to some of the other things that are in the works for the Shuswap Food Action Society, and some of them are already sort of in nascent form, school garden work, creating school gardens. Now, I think it's no surprise that the two leading lights in the Shuswap Food Action Society are two young women with young children. I say young women from my lofty perspective of somewhat older. But specifically, of course, Serena and her husband are both involved with the school system, and you have children who are going to be part of the school system. So school garden projects, you talked about educating young people. Is that not one of the best ways you can possibly get children to understand food?
Absolutely. Yes. We've been inviting schools up to this community garden, which is wonderful, and we will continue to invite people to come up through the summer. The school gardens, there is one at South Broadview. A beautiful garden was made at South Broadview School a number of years ago. And there is a garden happening right now at the South Canoe School. I'm not sure of all the other gardens that may be taking place at other schools, and we'd love to hear from anyone if they're having great success. You know, it comes with its challenges, certainly. One of them, of course, is that it really needs the teacher's involvement. And we really view it as a great learning tool, biology and science and chemistry. There's so many ways that you can do your academics around a garden space. I can only speak to the garden that's currently happening at the South Canoe Outdoor School because that's where my children go. It's a lovely space. They've sort of adopted a square foot gardening approach. They got a grant actually from the Farm to School program, and they secured the lumber to build these lovely boxes. They got the soil, and the kids, each class has their own box, and they're planting seeds and watching everything grow. And in it, they have sort of created this space where, like, in the center is a place where you can sort of teach too. So besides, you know, seeing that germination, seeing life take place as it grows from the soil, nibbling and sampling and tasting and watching things grow, and then ultimately it'd be wonderful to take that food into a kitchen. Not every school has a kitchen facility, but they usually have something. That would be the ultimate goal. A school garden at every school with a functional, even small scale kitchen that could turn it into something. Something like a smoothie or a soup, salads. That would be a really big goal. And it's happening other places. It just, where there's a will, there's a way.
Yes, I think it's a change in perspective that we're talking about, the perspective that somehow food comes from somewhere else, as opposed to understanding that it comes out of the ground wherever you eat it or consume it. That's where it starts. And yes, that knowledge, the memory, I have memories from my own childhood of planting a few seeds in a garden and watching them sprout and being absolutely thrilled and excited to see Mother Nature doing something that I had no control over, but was marvelous.
So there is something innate about that, something that just comes from a deep place that maybe you can't define. Seeing something sprout is so exciting.
It is indeed. It is indeed. And when you move up the sort of age ladder to, say, students at colleges and in somewhat more refined academic settings, there's also work that you're planning on doing with Okanagan College here in Salmon Arm and that sort of education setting. Talk a little bit about what your thoughts are about that.
Well, the continuing education liaison, Mandy Bell, from the college reached out, and she had an interest in just participating here at this community garden. But through that conversation, you know, they already have a horticultural landscaping program, and they're interested in just finding the courses and the, you know, what people are interested in learning. And certainly sustainable agriculture has become a big topic. And going back to regeneration of the soil, so much to do with climate change is going to be about managing the soil. And, you know, putting life back into the soil composition, and it comes back to our health, and everything stems from this soil that we walk upon. And so if the college can produce some courses and classes that have an agricultural lens, that would be a really great use of their infrastructure that they already have. And then we have this on-site physical space here that they could do it. Certainly the college has some land space that they could put in a garden. I know that they're looking at doing some housing and everything too. So, you know, long term, it would be great if the college had space dedicated to, you know, a student garden. But for now, we have this lovely space here. And if we do move things downtown too, hopefully there will be this sort of teaching space that can be done with help from the Okanagan College to secure the workshop and the instructors and just make everything very professional.
One of the issues that's come up repeatedly with interviewees not knowledgeable about the state of food growing and agriculture in general is the fact that there are no formal training programs like Red Seal programs for carpenters and electricians and plumbers for people who want to go into farming. There's a sort of an assumption you just, your parents are doing it and you learn from them and then you take over the farm. As it turns out, that's not happening. The children of farmers, probably watching the struggle that their own parents have been through often, have not necessarily gone on to take over the farm. But it would seem clear that if there were training programs beyond just educating people about the nature of food, but actually showing them how to grow food, that would also have a significant impact.
It's so important because, you know, so many of the young people who are not taking over the farms are just seeing it as such a difficult lifestyle. And so with good training from those who are doing things successfully, I mean, you know, the market gardener, Jean-Martin Fortier, out there in Quebec, I mean, he's changing things with market gardening and showing people that you can make a really good living by following some key steps, learning about soil health, you know, so there's lots to learn. And if you can learn it from someone first and avoid those mistakes and pitfalls, then you will be so much more successful, and that success will keep you going.
So we can educate children, we can educate youth and young adults, but we also have to educate the entire community or facilitate learning within the entire community. And that's one of the plans that's shaping up for the Food Action Society. It's already happening to some degree, but it's expanding food skill workshops, skills around preparing food, around using new foods that you might not be used to using, batch cooking, This sounds like it could lead to a constructive relationship with the new food hub, which is a place where individuals could go and actually put into practice both food producers and also ordinary folk in the community want to learn how to make something out of the food they have available to them. Talk about that a little bit, about the adult education side of community learning about food.
Well, we've always wanted, and we've done a few classes in the past. We did a canning class at one point, and our potlucks have always been about, you know, trying new foods and bringing people together. Food skills and those kinds of workshops is a goal, and what we need are people. Certainly, if you are somebody who likes to teach or knows how to ferment, can, dehydrate or cook great meals and snacks for kids. Those are the kinds of classes that people want to learn. There's a resurgence and a renaissance around fermenting and canning. And I mean, if we can all imagine, it doesn't have to be a group of women, certainly. It can be a group of men too, but let's just imagine a group of women who get together around a table and work together to chop and cut and work to create beautiful meals, can together. It's fun. You know, it makes it far more fun. But doing it on your own is a lofty goal, and it can be very intimidating. So creating these scenarios and situations in a community kitchen where we can get together to do it makes it more accessible, makes it more enjoyable, and will start you on that journey.
As we sort of wend our way towards the end of the show, you just said something now that I think is worth focusing on a little bit, and that is how women and the way women work and think has animated so much of what's happening around food. In many traditional societies, food preparation and even food harvesting, frankly, is a task that women accomplish. But women accomplish it in a certain way. They do it, as you just have said repeatedly, in a collaborative fashion and a group activity. When you see in African communities women carrying water jugs on their heads, they do it and they sing. And when they harvest, they sing and they talk and they share gossip and they talk about the men folk and how lazy they are.
What?
Who said that? I'm sorry.
Who said that?
Expunge that remark, quick. CRTC is going to be after me for that one. Yeah. But talk a little bit about how, as a woman with young children, as someone who's perhaps more connected than the average male is, we're good at eating it, but when it comes to preparing it and understanding it, we are not always on top of it. So why don't you talk about that? Because I think it's a relevant issue.
Yeah, and I mean, it's an absolute generalization. So please, no one, you know, take offense. If you're a man who likes to do all this and you cook, then that's amazing. Not every woman wants to do it either. So
indeed.
Regardless, I mean, for me personally, there's a nourishing factor to food, to eating. And certainly with my children, I want them to have, you know, great health and resilience, and I want them to grow into healthy adults. And I really do believe that food is medicine, that, you know, whatever you believe in for spirituality, you know, it was all put here for us, and everything we need is in plants. And so doing this is about nourishing my children, nourishing myself, nourishing my community. And doing it together is so much more fun. It puts a joy into it because it is challenging. It's hard. It is hard. It's hard to do it by yourself. And we have a lot. Women have a lot of hats that we're wearing now, and it really does take a village to raise, you know, good young adults and to just build a healthy society. It takes a village to do it. And we are missing that in our society. Women are feeling very separated from each other. We're very solo. Our family structures are, everybody's spread out. And meeting other moms, you know, you have to really try. when you can do that and develop those friendships and the people who can get together to do this work together, it just, it brings a lot of joy. Especially, and that's a big part of it.
Especially when it's focused around a shared and meaningful activity. In other words, it's not trivial. It's very central to our survival. And it's also so much easier, as you said, when the burden is shared in a group. Now, one factor that I think is relevant, it's a historical fact, and that is that we have, and this is just a little editorial comment, the phrase hunter-gatherer is a phrase that has been used for human societies prior to we are living in fixed settlements, which began about 10, 11,000 years ago. But for 400,000 years, we were hunter-gatherers, as we called ourselves, or as modern scientists called us. But in fact, science has shown that 70% of the calories that were used in what we now call foraging societies came from food gathering, which was done by women, children, and the elderly. And in fact, the mighty hunters only supplied about 30% of the food and nutritional intake. Now, it had some significant relevance, but the fact that we've changed our broad perspective around our long, long history of humans and how we obtain food to understanding that women actually were the mainstay of the food system in foraging societies rather than an adjunct, I think is a reflection of some of the things you're talking about, Melanie, the fact that women have played a central role in getting food into the mouths of the community.
Yeah, and still do. You know, I believe, I don't know what the statistics are, but, you know, women getting into farming now is really big numbers.
Yes, and BC leads in that number, that demographic. We in BC have more young women farmers engaging in either starting up or continuing to engage themselves in farming. Now, it's worthwhile mentioning before we go that the AGM of the Shuswap Food Action Society is coming up on June the 15th at 7 p.m. on that famous location known as Zoom. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what's in store for people who would like to become part of the society and who are looking at the new directions and want to learn about new directions that the society is going to pursue.
So yes, so we decided on Zoom just because, and we will put a link out through our newsletter. We will have a link on Instagram. We will have a link on Facebook so people can join into the call. If you do not do any of those things, you can always email info@shuswapfood.ca in order to get that link. That will be from 7:30 until 8:30. Hopefully, you know, we can talk a lot. We want as many people as possible because we just want to keep the momentum going. Coldest night of the year lent us great momentum, and we are very excited about all the things that we can do. But we can only do so much as a limited amount of people. And what we are hoping is that we can get people who are interested in learning more about where we've come from, what we're doing now, and all of these really exciting ideas that we have for the future, and become a member. We want to talk a little bit more about a membership drive that we have. We have a little bit of restructuring that's going to be happening. We'll be opening up for new board members. So everybody knows, all attendees will get their name thrown into a hat, and we're going to do a draw for a shoebox. So that will be during that call. And we want people to become engaged, to know what they could do, because so often with volunteerism, you need to know, well, what can I do? And we will be happy to let you know.
Community engagement, it's a theme that has run through our entire review of the Shuswap Food Action Society's work, plans, hopes, and aspirations. How would you characterize the unique input that community engagement brings into a project like this Shuswap Food Action Society?
Well, there's so many different arms that can happen. There's so many different spokes of the wheel. If food is that center hub, there are many different projects that can occur. But certainly, no few people can do it all. And if people, you have to be the change you want to see. You can't just let other people do things for you. And community involvement means you're being given opportunities to lend your skills. Everyone has a skill. It does not have to be physical. It can be mental. It can be financial. Everyone has something to contribute. And what we can offer are projects and ideas. We can create these committees. If you feel like you have had experience on something, maybe you've done gleaning before and you know how it could work, you can become involved. And you don't have to commit a ton of time. You could be just a part of getting it going and then you walk away. Or maybe it develops these friendships and a connection and a purpose that's so big right now. We need human beings, I believe, we need a purpose. And we want to give people a really great purpose to rally behind.
I often say to my patients, I'm sorry to hear that you're seriously addicted to food. And it always brings a smile because it is something that we cannot do without. You need air and oxygen for 4 minutes. You can't do without it for more than 4 minutes. You can do without water for maybe 7 to 10 days, depending on your age, maybe even a little longer if you're a newborn. But you can't do without food for more than a month or two, or you're gone. And you may suffer permanent damage. And that's at the outset.
We can't do without it, but we can't do well without good food.
Absolutely. And I think the Shuswap Food Action Society has really charted a path that is pretty well accepted in the community as leading to a very good outcome. Melanie, I want to thank you for being on the show again and for all the work that's going on that you're engaged in with the Shuswap Food Action Society. Thank you very much for being a guest on our show today.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Pleasure having you. Bye.